So Christians have these dramatic differences in their response, and the hostilities between them tend to be at that level. Who is critical and who is loyal? On one side, loyalty means you can't think critically. On the other side, if you're going to think critically, you have to be disloyal. So that to find a kind of a middle position in which loyalty to the tradition and the use of critical intelligence are combined is a very difficult place to occupy. Now, I also said that Christians in the 20th century began to make significant steps toward bridging traditional hostilities, moving from active rivalry between denominations, and I'm talking about denominations now, Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox, Baptist, Lutheran, so forth, from active rivalry and hostility toward fraternal understanding. And this is found in a movement called the Ecumenical Movement. The term ecumenical means universal. And this is a movement in the 20th century toward Christian unity. Now, it must be said immediately that the ability of Christians to fight each other on the basis of the name of Christ and in terms of politics and violence has not disappeared completely. Northern Ireland is an outstanding example. The battles between Orthodox and Catholics in Croatia Bosnia is another example. And really, up until the 1960s, those who grew up in the United States are well aware of the intolerance between Christian groups. Catholics were not allowed to marry Protestants without special dispensations. And when John F. Kennedy, as a Roman Catholic, was running for president, there was an outbreak of virulent anti-Catholicism on the part of many Protestant groups. But nevertheless, despite this residue of those ancient European hostilities, during the 20th century, beginning with Protestant denominations in the 1920s began to seek a form of unity. They said, we're just killing each other. And so they began by joining in practical projects of helping people and engaging in social welfare. And slowly, by working together, began to gain an appreciation of each other. And in 1948, the World Council of Churches was created. And the World Council of Churches is a Protestant organization that seeks ecumenism, that is, unity among Christian bodies. Now, the great resister of this was Roman Catholicism. But in 1963 to 1965, the greatest event in Roman Catholicism in 500 years occurred, and that is the Second Vatican Council. It was called by a very unlikely person, the Pope John XXIII, who was an elderly man and thought to be something of a caretaker pope, turned out to be a revolutionary. And he summoned a great council of Catholic bishops from around the world in 1963 in order to accomplish what he called aggiornamento. In Italian, it means getting up to date, becoming relevant. And for John the 23rd, Catholicism needed to reverse its recent history. Rather than condemning modernity, condemning the Enlightenment. And one might remember that Pope Pius the 10th, in the beginning of the 20th century, condemned as a heresy modernism, and condemned as a heresy, interestingly enough, Americanism, the notion that democracy was the best way to order a government as opposed to a monarchy. So this was reversing the sort of totalitarian position of Roman Catholicism and its exclusiveness. And so this great council was called. And interestingly enough, Protestant observers and experts and religious leaders were invited to the council and came. So this was the greatest gathering of Christian leaders of all denominations in centuries, in an amicable atmosphere. And so in terms of internal Catholic life, the council is important because it really did turn Catholicism toward the modern world. Notice that under the influence of the American Jesuit John Courtney Murray, the Roman Catholic Church came out in favor of religious freedom for the first time in its history, rather than the suppression of heresy. But also vis-a-vis Protestantism, the council issued decrees on other religions and joined the ecumenical movement.